Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. I'm Julia Cannon, and tonight is January 5th. Happy New Year's, everybody. And we're here. It's finally warming up a little bit. I hope you're warm where you are. I know there's some really strange weather going on out there, so hopefully you're staying warm. We'll send you warmth and love wherever you are. We've got a wonderful show, fantastic show lined up for you tonight. I'm so excited with our guest tonight. But first, before we get started, just a little bit of announcements. We've got a class coming up in February, a QHHT Level 1 companion class in Des Moines, Iowa, that Suzanne Spooner will be teaching. And it's in February. You can get the details about that on QHHT official or DoloresCannon.com. So if you're interested in that, just please go to the websites and you'll have that. Then we have our conferences coming up in April and August. So those are coming around again. So get all the news on that on our conference websites and all of our websites. We have links going over to those. So here we all are again, coming up. Everything's coming in. So we're gearing back up again for all of our activities. And here we go. So excited. Our speaker, our guest tonight has another book out. You're on a roll, Garnet.
Yes, thank you.
And I would love your books. As I always say, it's always, where are we going now? You know, the next adventures of you and Albert. And that's what I love about your book. So our guest tonight, everybody, I mean, if you're new to meeting Garnet, is Garnet Schulhauser. And he's one of our authors with Ozark Mountain Publishing. And I'll let you tell your story a little bit. I know you have an encapsulated version now because it's number four, everybody, fourth book. And you have the best way of telling your adventures. You just, it's really, really wonderful how you just take us along on your journey. It's really easy and we're just along for the ride. And it's wonderful how you do that. Let's first let you talk and just tell us how you came into this, and then we'll get on to the further adventures of where you're going in this last book here. First, I want to tell a little bit before you get going with that is this book is, like I said, the fourth. That's probably part of what you were going to say, but the first one you had was Dancing on a Stamp, and I think I've got the order right. Was it Dancing Dancing Forever with Spirit? Was that the second one?
Yes.
Okay, and then Dance of Heavenly Bliss, and then this one is Dance of Eternal Rapture.
Right.
Okay, so there we go. That's the four books, and this one just came in, I think, today. It came in from the printer. So, I mean, hot off the press, everybody. So here we go. We've got a good, get the glare off of it. There we go. So, all right. So you can get it now. It's here. You don't have to pre-order it now. It is here. So, all right. Take it away, Garnet. Glad you're here.
Thanks for having me, Julia. It all started way back in 2007, which like almost 10 years now. And I was a practicing lawyer, a corporate lawyer, very much of a stuffed shirt, straight laced kind of a corporate lawyer. And I was walking down the street one sunny afternoon in May when out of nowhere, a homeless man just jumped in front of me. And he looked like a typical homeless man with stringy hair and scraggly beard and dirty slept in clothes. But he had these amazing, dazzling, sparkling blue eyes. And he seemed to be peering right down into me, right down to the depths of my soul. And I sensed that he knew everything about me, everything I'd ever said or done, all my hopes and aspirations, all my fears and anxieties, even my deepest and darkest secrets, which was strange because I'd never met this man before. But I didn't feel violated because at the same time, his gaze was sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that was really infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace, security, and well-being. It was a wonderful feeling, better than anything I ever felt before in my life. So I was quite happy to stand there in basking in his glow. And then he broke the spell by saying to me, "Why are you here?" And he promptly disappeared into a nearby store. And when I finally collected my wits, I went into the store to try to find him because I had to find out more about this man. But I walked up and down all the aisles. He was nowhere to be seen. When I went back out on the street, walked up and down for a few blocks, hoping to spot him, but he had disappeared into thin air. So I went back to my office and I resolved on the way back that I was going to try to find him the very next day. And I did. Same street, same time. I walked up and down hoping to spot him. And when I was about ready to give up, I spotted him sitting all alone on the bench. So I went up to him and I said, "Who are you and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." And unfortunately, I guess it turned out to be okay. But initially, my lawyer brain kicked in, my skeptical lawyer brain kicked in. And I said to him, "Well, why do you think you can help me when you can't even help yourself? Because you've been sleeping on the street for weeks and you smell like a dead fish." Well, he just gave me a big smile and he said, "You know, looks can be deceiving because you look like you're a successful lawyer with everything under control. But we both know that's just a facade." So he said, "You know, if you want to, turn around and go back to your office and see if you can find the answers you've been seeking in all those emails waiting for you on your computer, or sit down and have a chat with me." So then fortunately, my skepticism was overcome. My intuition said, "I have to sit down and talk to this guy. What do I have to lose? Half an hour of my day?" So I did. That began a dialogue that I had with this man that went off and on for several months. I found out his name was Albert, and he was really one of my spirit guides in disguise. And so the first three times he appeared to me in physical form, and he told me that I was the only one who could actually see him in physical form. I could not only see him, but I could touch him as well. And he said that anybody else had been walking by the bench that day, they would have seen me sitting there by myself, talking to myself, because no one else could see him. And then in the later encounters I had with him, he was just a voice in my head. We communicate by telepathy. And when I said to him, "Why did you appear to me the first three times in physical form?" And he said, "Well, if I just started talking to you out of the blue as a voice in your head, you probably would have thought you're losing your mind." And he's right. I probably would have. So this was his way of easing me into the conversation. So I found out early on that he had come not only to satisfy my curiosity, but he wanted his revelations to be made available to everyone. So he coaxed me over a period of time into writing a book about our conversation, about our dialogue. And so I did. And the first book was Dancing on a Stamp. And then after that book was out, he came back to me in a slightly different format. I was sound asleep in my bed one night, and I woke up and I saw this ghost-like figure standing in the doorway of my bedroom. When it moved closer to me, I could see, well, it was Albert. He was in astral form. Albert said, "I'm here to take you on a series of astral trips to the spirit side, to other places in the universe, other places on your planet, because I want you to write a book about what you see and hear." And so I said, "Well, okay." So he literally grabbed my astral hand and pulled my astral body out of my physical body, which was still sound asleep in my bed. And we went up through the ceiling, up through the clouds, and that began our first series of astral adventures, which is detailed in my second book, Dancing Forever with Spirit. And then I had further astral excursions with him. Another set was detailed in my third book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss. And the most recent set is in my fourth book, which just came out, Dance of Eternal Rapture. So that's my history with Albert, who's a very wise and compassionate spirit, very loving. Oftentimes he was mischievous and a bit of a rascal, had a great sense of humor. So it's not all sort of so serious in terms of what happens on Earth or on the spirit side. There's a lot of humor going around there, and he showed me some of it, and it was, and often I was the brunt of his jokes, but that's fine. I didn't mind that. It was just, it sort of livened things up a bit. But anyway, he's a very interesting character. He always had his own agenda, Julia. So he would never tell me when he was coming. He'd never tell me exactly where we're going. It was just sort of all a surprise. But he had it all picked out. He wanted me to see certain people, see certain places, and he wanted me to write about them, and he wanted those revelations to be made available to everyone. So he was he had a very set agenda for me.
Okay. So, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the agendas or what some of the things, like especially in this last one, because each time we've talked about the different things that he showed you. And so it, like, were there themes that you saw, like in each book you had kind of different themes, it seemed like?
Yeah, I think the overriding theme that runs through all of the books, Julia, is that we have to understand, like, who we are really. We're eternal souls. We came here incarnated in a human form by our own choice. No one made us come here. We came here to learn and experience things that we needed for our evolution as souls. And he said, you know, which is contrary to what a lot of religions have preached, is that, you know, God or the source doesn't make rules for us to follow, doesn't manipulate events on earth. And when we die, there's no judgment, there's no punishment, there's no hell. We all go back to the spirit side from where we were before. And so that, with that sort of theme, he wants us to understand who we really are. And he wants us to understand all the sort of the things that happen to us on a human journey, all the challenges, all the things we have to overcome, you know, why we have to face them, who put us here, you know, and why we have to go through some of the things that we don't really like. It's because, well, we planned our lives, and even though we don't remember how we planned them or what we put in our life plans, and because we have free will to act, things often go off course, and sometimes we have to be gently nudged or sometimes hit over the head with a 2x4 to get us back on track, but our spirit guides are there to do that. And so a lot of the places I saw, for example, were human civilizations on other planets where things are much better than Earth. It's like, you know, we have a lot of negative things happening, a lot of violence, a lot of abuse, you know, a lot of negative emotions, out of control, fear, anger, hate, greed, which causes all the conflicts. There's a lot of human civilizations where they have overcome that, which gives us hope that we can do the same if we just get together and pull together on this. And so he's really trying to give us a message, make us comfortable with the idea that this is why we're here. And no matter how many times we make a mistake, how many wrong turns we make, we're always going to end up back on the spirit side from where we came. So we can't get lost, we can't go wrong, we're always going to end up back there. And our challenge here is to try to live the life that we have planned for ourselves as best we can, meet the challenges, and learn all the lessons that we meet every day with our challenges. And that's really to develop and grow and evolve. And so that's why we're here. So with that knowledge, people can sort of better understand that when adversity hits them, that, you know, there's something to be learned there, something to be learned from every bad event, the good events as well. Everything we do, whether we're on course or off course, there's something to be learned. And it's all a learning adventure. And he's, you know, one of the things he said to me was over and over, he said, you know, don't take life so seriously because you can never go wrong or become lost. It's all an adventure. So laugh lots, smile lots, and enjoy your journey because that's all that it is. And you'll get go back to the beauty and splendor of the spirit side when you die. So, you know, there you are. That's what you really have to, how you have to look at things.
Well, they're always saying it's an experience. And so we've got to get off of that. Yeah, it's so many times where it's lessons, they say through it. So look more of it as being experiences.
Exactly.
That helps us get to that place. Enjoy the experience.
Yeah, no, and enjoy it. That's what he's trying to tell us, is that don't take it so seriously. You know, a lifetime of 80 years on Earth is just like the blink of an eye on the spirit side because they don't have linear time. So he says, you know, when you left there, your friends would say bye-bye, and then before you could turn around, you're back again, and you've lived 80 years on Earth, you know. So he said it's on the spirit side, it's a very brief adventure, even though it may seem long and tedious to us here when we're in the midst of it, but that's just the way planet Earth is. That's just the way the school is.
Yeah, what I'm hearing as I said that is we're experiencing, we're having experiences. We may be learning things from those experiences, or we learn things from those experiences, but they're always experiences. So it's just enjoy the experience.
Enjoy the experience and understand that nobody's foisting these on you. The universe isn't doing things to you. The source isn't doing things to you. It's just happening. You know, it's because you set out your initial game plan and your life plan. You know, you picked out the place you're going to be born, your parents, your siblings, your relatives, friends, coworkers. You established all that. You laid the groundwork, and then from there, your free will just takes you down the road. And so you're, as your mother often says, you're the screenwriter and director and producer of your own play, and you change it as you go.
Exactly. What was she saying? Yeah, the director, the producer, the all of that, and then you're writing the script as it goes. So it's like it's up to you. you know, you're the one writing it and doing, you're the actor, the, you're playing all parts, you're doing all of it. So make it what you want.
Exactly. Yeah, you're the author of your own reality. And if you understand that, it's much easier to get through the, some of the tough patches in life, understanding that there's something there to be learned and that you can change it if you want to change it.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the... Now, I just had a revelation like that just today. So
did you?
Things like that. Yeah, absolutely. And it was just... when you have those like that, it just completely turns everything, you know, from being in this drudgery or whatever, you know, when you're kind of in the to the, wait a minute, I don't have to do that. I can be, you know, you just switch it.
Just change it. Yeah, make up your mind to change it.
That's all you do. You just change it. And it was all just from here. You just change the perspective or whatever, you know. It was just a thought change. That's all it was. And it completely changes everything.
Yeah, absolutely. In any event, so in most of my trips, Julia, they were designed, I mean, you know, meet very wise souls on the spirit side who had sort of things to say that really sort of hit home to you know, for me and for all humans. Met a lot of, went to different planets in the universe to see how they survived, how they developed. And it was all designed to help us as souls with our human journeys, but also to help humankind on Earth sort of get over the bad patch that we're in, because we're really in a bad situation where there's so much violence and conflict and wars and things. And they really do, Albert and the other spirits on the spirit side really want humanity, our human civilization, to succeed. They want us to get past this junction that we're in where things can go badly if we don't act in a proper manner. You know, like we have weapons of mass destruction, we can destroy all life on our planet if unleashed. And they really don't want that to happen because they've watched other human civilizations in the past rise up to great heights and then crash and burn, you know, like Atlantis and Lemuria and a number of others that we have never even heard of. And so they're really pushing hard to get humanity sort of over this bump that we're in and move on and climb the spiritual ladder. And so that's really the other sort of theme that they've been giving me in all my travels as to how we can help humans, ourselves and other humans, how we can help them improve our lives, have better journeys, and overcome all the conflict and violence that we seem to, I mean, you don't watch the news, but if you watch the news every night, there's always something going on, which is quite depressing. And so you're probably wise to not watch the news, Julia.
Well, but that's why I don't watch it, is because I don't want it to affect me. I want to create my world, and I don't want that to be what creates my world. Because if I watch it, then that's telling me what to make my world. And I don't want that to be what my world is.
Yeah, so. No, and I agree. Unfortunately, I can't resist watching the news to see what's going on, even though a lot of it is depressing. But it's very interesting. I mean, I've met some very famous souls that people are very well aware of in my fourth book. I met with Muhammad, Buddha, Archangel Michael, Archangel Ariel, Aphrodite, the goddess of love, William Shakespeare, Leonardo da Vinci, Robin Williams, Elvis Presley, all kinds of, they all had a story to tell, a story that really had meaning for me and for people on our planet. And so I was very happy to meet these people and to relay it in my book, my fourth book, some of the things they said. It's really quite fascinating.
Well, you want to give a little glimmer of a little bit of what was said, or just something just as a teaser here. That's a teaser, what you just gave, but give a little bit. You don't have to give everything, but just.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the more interesting characters I met with was Muhammad, the founder of Islam. And he was a very wise, compassionate, loving soul. And so I asked him, I said, you know, you originated Islam, which has many followers, over a billion followers. What do you think about what has developed? And he said, well, there's been a lot of good with his religion, but he was really upset in two areas. And the first area was, he said, he never preached or intended to have his religion be the excuse for the subjugation of women. And he said he just thinks it's very, very wrong for them to make women, you know, wear things in their head or cover their faces or their whole body. You know, in some countries, girls can't go to school or or can't work. Some places, Saudi Arabia until recently, they couldn't even drive cars. And he said, that was never intended by me, and it's something that they've just distorted from my teachings. And he said he feels really badly about that because he always felt that women were equal and should be treated with dignity and respect. So he was quite upset about that. The other thing he's upset about was the way that some of the people in modern day, like ISIS, for example, where they have they're doing awful things, conflicts, terrorism in the name of Allah, in the name of religion. And he says that he in no way ever preached violence, or that we should, or that his followers should, you know, attack Christians or other religious people. He said no, it was always sort of love and compassion for everyone, whether they worshiped his God or a different God or worship no God, it didn't matter. So he was really quite upset at all the violence being caused in the name of Islam, in the name of Allah, and he said that's just totally wrong. And so it was really an eye opener for me. He really made the record clear. I asked him if I could repeat what he said in my book. He said, sure, go ahead, but nobody will believe you, so go ahead.
I found that a common message in here. Go ahead and put it in there, but nobody will believe you.
yeah, exactly. And you know, and he was a master soul who had incarnated to sort of to help humankind, like Jesus and Buddha and Moses and some of the other ones. And so he's a bit dismayed about what was going on. I said to him, do you ever have a thought about coming back to Earth to try to set things straight? He said, yeah, he'd love to. He's just waiting for the word, the nudge from the Council of Wise Ones for when he should go. But he was really quite anxious to come back. So who knows, maybe he'll come back. And I met with Buddha, who actually was another master soul. He had come, you know, before Muhammad had come to try to spiritually enlighten people. He was a very, again, wise, compassionate soul. We actually had, I met him at a gathering of souls in the spirit side, and he led sort of a group meditation, which was really quite amazing because the idea was to sort of become unified with the source, and it was really an amazing feeling. He tried to do that on Earth. It didn't work as well, but on the spirit side, things would go a lot easier. So it was really quite a neat experience. So Archangel Michael, again, a very benevolent, wise angel. He's an angel. And I said to him, so you are the leader of the angels. People say that you're the head of the angels. And he said, well, no, there's no hierarchy over here. It's like I organize other angels to help them in their doing their work on Earth, but we're all equals. And so he was very happy to do that. And again, he confirmed to me, which I had heard many times from Albert and other people, is that the devil does not exist. It's just a fiction created by various organized religions. So he was a very wise and compassionate soul. Archangel Ariel, it was interesting. One of her main functions is to help counsel souls who are going to incarnate on Earth as into an animal, which may surprise some people, but souls can actually incarnate into animals, as your mother well knew and talked about in her books. And so she said it used to be relatively easy because you could you pretty much could predict what your life as an animal would be depending on which one you picked. But since the humans came along, now it's unpredictable. So you could say, I'm going to be incarnate as a lion, being the king of the beasts, and all of a sudden men will come along and shoot you, which isn't something normal, in the wild, without humans, that the lion would sort of live forever without any without any predators. Really, he was really the top of the food chain, and so so humans have complicated things on Earth because you never know how human intervention is going to affect a life as an animal that somebody may choose. So a lot of people may find this strange, but anyway, she was really quite an amazing lady, and again, that her theme was sort of one that I'd heard many times before from many other souls, is that humans are just too abusive to animals on our planet. They interfere too much. They kill for sport. They kill for trophies. They kill for no reason at all. Or they kill for exotic animal parts like shark fins or elephant tusks or rhino horns. So it's really quite abusive when you think about it. We've caused a lot of animals to go extinct. And so the theme from her was, we wish humans would just back away and learn to live in peace and harmony with the other creatures on your planet, which is the same theme that that I got from Gaia, who is the consciousness of Mother Earth. And I met with her again, as described in Book 4.
You did before, right?
Yeah, she was. I met with her first time, which I described in book three, and now in book four, Albert took me back there. Gaia had the same message again, which is, you know, look, humans, you're really being abusive. You abuse each other, you abuse the other animals, you abuse Mother Earth with your pollution, and you're really sort of out of control. You have to get yourself back on the straight and narrow, because if you don't, with your pollution, you're going to end up destroying. You could end up destroying all life on our planet. And in the meantime, you know, you're really harming my other creatures. And Gaia is very fiercely protective of her flora and fauna. She really wants all of her creatures, including humans, to just get along and have a balanced ecosystem. But humans have really disrupted the whole thing. We're like an invasive weed that's taken over the whole garden. And so so she's very upset about that. And she said that. And I think that your mother already knew this part, is that she's trying to raise her vibrations to move up to a higher dimension.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and she says that it's difficult because humans are holding her back with all of our negative energy. And so, mm-hmm. you know, she's striving to get there. She wants us to move up to a higher dimension, and then right. everyone can just go along. And so that's one of our goals. But the interesting thing, you know, you talk about all the nasty climate that's going on. And she said that she has the power to manipulate weather and climate on our planet. And she's been doing it by increasing the number and intensity of natural disasters like storms and hurricanes, floods, fires, whatever. She's trying to get our attention. It's sort of like we haven't been listening to her, so now she has to hit us over the head with a 2x4. And she's doing that the only way she can, by increasing these natural disasters. And her hope is that we'll wake up finally and say, okay, we better change our ways, otherwise it's going to keep on getting worse. So she's really firing a warning shot across our bow to wake us up. And I think people are noticing. It's just going to take a lot more people to notice and then actually do something about it, so that we can change our ways and get our planet back on track.
Right. I remember you saying that the last time, and that's when all these things are happening. It's like I remember that, you know, it's like, and then it's going to get more and more and more until, come on, do something. And it's interesting because that's what's happening now, is like weather things that have never happened before. And that's, they keep going, this has never happened. And it's just like, well, what does it take? What does it take to get you to listen?
Yeah, and she's hitting us with extremes of all kinds, and very deliberately so, because she wants us to just understand that we have to change our ways. Otherwise, it's going to keep on getting worse. And we have to stop our pollution, the pollution which not only it actually harms ourselves, you know, our planet where we live, but hurts the other animals on our planet as well. And so it's on a course that just is not good, and we have to change our ways. And she's, you know, like, it's like, you know, in your book, Soul Speak, when we personally don't listen to the messages, then we get hit with ailments and to really get our attention. And it's the same thing with Gaia. She's hitting us with what she has, which are natural disasters, and she's increasing them and making them worse at all extremes. And so hopefully more and more people will pay attention to what she's doing and why she's doing it.
Yeah, and that's what I've heard before, is like earthquakes are just that shaking, things like that, anything like that to shake you awake. It's just because what will get your attention? You know, it's whatever will take. So I thought we were getting better. You know, I really did.
Well, I think we are getting better. I mean, we're way better than we were 20 years ago, say, Julia. Mm-hmm. But she was really saying we really have to pick up the pace of the change and getting better okay. faster. Yeah, and so that's why she's really doing it, and she's losing patience with us, I think, to a certain degree, even though she's not, she doesn't have any ill will towards humans at all. I mean, we're just one of her creatures, but she really doesn't like what we're doing to the planet and to her other creatures, and so she really wants us to pick up the pace of change. And I think that if everyone sort of pays attention to that, I think we can all get there. It has to start individually, that we have, you know, I have to start doing better, and then get my family to, and my neighbors, and if we all spread the message around, I think we'll get there. It's just that we need to pick up the pace.
Okay. Well, and it really does. They've always said it has to start on the individual level. Some people say, well, they want to change the world, but it really has to start right here.
Exactly.
And then it starts a ripple effect.
Yeah. And I did, I have the opportunity of going to another human civilization, which I detail in my fourth book, mm-hmm. which was way more advanced than ours, had a lot more technology, but they mm-hmm. were a very harmonious, placid society. There was no violence, no crime. There was no money. And so none of the negative emotions that we experience all the time that cause all the conflicts, they were all gone. They had discovered, Julia, way back when their scientists had, that there was a defective gene in humans that led to sort of the negative emotions and the violence. And they managed to, over time, engineer that out of humans. And so in that society, there was no violence, no hate, fear, anger, you know, that sort of thing. It was a very idyllic society, and it was really quite amazing. And so one of the interesting things there was that they had, which I found quite interesting, was that they had developed what they called a diet pill. And if you took this diet pill, you could eat whatever you wanted to, all kinds of decadent food, and you'd never gain an ounce of weight, and you'd be still in robust health. This was an amazing pill. And she said they recognized that humans on their planet love to eat and drink and enjoy things. And food was one of their pleasures. And with this diet pill, no adverse effects. And I said, well, how about, can I take one of those back with me? Yeah. she says, no, can't give that to you because you're going to have to figure that one out for yourself. And in terms of and I was quite upset at that. And as we left the planet, I said to Albert, I'm really sorry, we can't have that diet pill. And he said, well, in due course, you probably will, your society will develop it. But he says, in the meantime, if it'll make you feel any better, when we get back to Earth, I'll buy you a bacon double cheeseburger with fries.
But I like that he's showing you these other societies and these other places that have moved beyond. So that way it's showing that it's like, look, you don't have to be stuck in this. It's like there's another way. Exactly. There's something else. And that, you know, it's like it not only just shows you hope, but it's like it shows you the way.
Exactly. It's showing us the path. We can get there. Look at these people have done it. They're mm-hmm. humans just like you. And we could do it as well. We just that we have the roadmap laid out for us. We just have to make the journey and get there. So it was very encouraging, and that's why he showed me the civilization. And anyway, it'd be nice if our civilization could be like that. But we have to work at it.
Absolutely, and that's all we need. So that's wonderful, because sometimes that's all we get is, hey, there's hope, you know, and that. But that's not enough. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, it's great to have hope, but it's even better, I mean, if you have a roadmap, my gosh, well, then we know we can do it. There's a way, well, then let's just do it. We know we can, okay, let's go down that road then.
and the unfortunate thing is they're not going to let, they can't sort of come to Earth and just give mm-hmm. us all the tools that they develop, because that's too much interference. We have to learn it and get there ourselves. And so, this particular civilization, they travel between the stars. So they've been watching what we're doing, and they're sort of shaking their heads saying, yeah, we were like that a long time ago, but we got past that. And hopefully you guys can too. And so, but they can't just lay it all out for us. It'd be too easy.
So yeah, but look at this. This is wonderful. By them planting the seeds of this information and this knowledge with you, and you planting the seeds now here, and we'll spread it and say, hey, it can be done. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Then, you know, it's like, okay, it's not hopeless. We don't have to stay on this wheel and do all this stuff and just be doing this and just stumbling along in the darkness. No, there's a way. We can get out of it. You know, it can be done.
Yeah, we can. And the other thing that we can do, even before our whole civilization gets there individually, we can actually raise our vibrations and make mm-hmm. the ascension up to the yeah. new Earth. And it was really interesting, because one of the people I encountered on the spirit side was a lady who, very interesting story. She was married. She had a couple of kids. And one day her husband and her children were out for a drive, and they got T-boned by a drunk driver, and they were all killed. Mm. And this lady just spiraled into the depths of despair. Like, she was just depressed, and she was angry, and she was, because her family was killed. Mm. Excuse me. And it got so bad that she was thinking of suicide. And then a friend of hers said, well, look, before you do that, why don't you go visit an ashram in India, and maybe they can help you. And so she did. She went to the ashram in India, where she began to meditate. It was difficult at first, but then she got better and better at it. And then eventually one day she got to the point where she was able to forgive the driver that killed her family. And then things really became easier. And then one day she was in the garden by herself in a deep meditation. And when she woke up, she was in a different place. And what had happened, she had ascended to the new earth. She had raised her vibrations. So there she was, and she was in the new earth. And so she told me that she lived a very nice life in the new earth after that. And when she left the body in the new earth, came back to the spirit side, and I said to her, well, are you going to go back when you incarnate again? Are you going to go back to the new earth? And she said, no, I'm going to incarnate back on the old earth so I can help people there make the ascension like I did. And so she was a very brave and gracious soul. But it just shows you that there individually we can make the ascension before Gaia does or before the rest of our you know, countrymen do it. We can do it. And it's just really a matter of, you know, embracing love and compassion, forgiveness, and getting rid of all the negative emotions. And when you can do that, then you just pop up like a cork popping up from underneath the water, you know, up to the top. It just happens. So that's also encouraging. So if you know, if we don't want to wait for the rest of our civilization to do it, we just do it ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. okay. So you have so much in here. Let's see. Goodness gracious. On Earth. That's probably part of that. Talking to the dead, was that? That's putting you on the spot here too, if I just pull up something here. For you to try to remember what that chapter was about. this one intrigues me here because of a life that I had, and it was the witch hunt.
That was an interesting story. Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. I met with a lady by the name of Anne, who had lived her last life as a lady in Salem, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. right around the time when all the witch hunting was going on, when they were hanging all the witches. And so her story was you know, kind of unique. She was a lady who lived by herself. She was, you know, strong, independent lady. She lived by herself on the outskirts of the town she was living in. Didn't have a husband. She didn't socialize with the other townspeople. Didn't go to church, and she liked to dress in black. And so the people in the town obviously were concerned. They're actually fearful. They thought there's something wrong with this, particularly the men. In those days, men did not like strong, independent women. Women were supposed to be, women were supposed to be, you know.
Men don't.
You know, they expected women to be barefoot, pregnant in the kitchen, and subservient to their men folk. And so here was a lady who was very different. And so they were suspicious of her. And so what happened one day was that she was in her house, and she heard her cat screaming, and she looked out in the yard, and there were three young hooligans who were basically torturing her cat. So she ran out and chased them away. Well, these young guys went to their parents and said, that lady cast a spell on us. And so because of that, she was then arrested. She had a very short trial, convicted of being a witch, and she was hung. And just because she chased the boys away who were torturing her cat, and because of her lifestyle. So it was very, that happened a lot in those days, but it was just really indicative of sort of the mindset back in those days, is that you should not be a strong, independent woman, or else something's going to happen to you because you're not supposed to be that way, you know? And unfortunately, some of that the thinking still carries forward to today, but we're trying to get rid of it.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's really good, because all of that, it just keeps carrying, you're saying, the fear and all those things. It just keeps carrying through. We just have to eliminate it. And that's where it all keeps coming from, and that's where a lot of that we're living with now is because we had those things happen to us in other lives, you know, that it was blocked off.
And I suspect that hopefully that some of those men who convicted her and who executed her would have had subsequent lives as somebody in her position. I mean, that would have really been sort of what goes around comes around. She didn't get into that, but I think that often happens. And anyways, it's really an eye opener that, you know, and it sort of brought home the fact that, you know, in those days it was quite harsh, where if they thought you were a witch, they would, you know, hang you. Whereas today it's not quite that drastic, but it still could be bad for women in that situation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they hang and burn and all kinds of things.
Yeah. But,
yeah, absolutely. Goodness. So another thing, okay, let's jump a little bit. You were prompted. I'm going to bring in something if that's okay.
Sure.
In this last, it's off the book. It's not maybe it's away from the book a little bit, but I feel like it does have something to do in your journey and everything. You were guided to become a practitioner.
Yes, I was. It was Albert, and as I explained to you back in September in Vancouver, when I finished the manuscript for my fourth book, I said to Albert, okay, what now? Should I write book five, or you know, what do you have in store for me? He said, no, put that on hold. You should become a QHHT practitioner, which, you know, it never had occurred to me before, and I'm certainly aware of you and your program, being an author, OMP author. So I thought, fine. So I took the online course in April, took the level two course in Vancouver, and it's been a great sort of enlightenment for me. Really enjoy doing the sessions. I've learning a lot from doing those sessions, and I think I'm helping people. So it's been a great new sort of venue for me. And so I was really happy that Albert sort of nudged me into it. I mean, he always knows what's best for me, even though I might be reluctant at first. But anyway, that was a great suggestion on his part, and I quite enjoy it. It's been a great adventure for me.
Well, it's like you're seeing it from the other side, really, because you had the way you were getting information, or you are getting information with Albert, and then now you're getting it from this side with clients. I mean, you know, from with the QHHT, and so it's like it's interesting. So how would you describe it? I mean, or how would you? What am I trying to say? Because it's very similar information, I imagine.
Yes, yes, it is. One of the things I was amazed at was that about how many people of my clients, and I'm not sure why it happened with my clients, but so many of them had very troubling lives. You know, I mean, there was a lot of them that were sexually abused as children. A lot of them sort of, you know, were drug abusers. Some of them, there was even a gentleman who was a male prostitute. They had some really troubling lives, and so I could see why they were coming for answers, and I was thankful that through by contacting their higher selves we got a lot of the answers, which really helped them, and it's sort of like a great release. But it really made me think that I had a really great upbringing, a great childhood, a great life compared to them, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure why those people were coming to me, but I think that was part of a lesson for me, is that hey, look, there's a lot of people that had very troubling lives, and a lot and most of them, when they came to me, had overcome all that. They've straightened, you know, they've gotten back on course, they managed to deal with it, so just to me, it demonstrated that no matter what happens to me, if bad things happen to me, I mean, that's nothing compared to what some of those other people had to go through. So just, you know, suck it up and get on with it, you know. So it was a good lesson for me as well. And the information is very similar, like from what Albert's and the other people I've met and coming from the higher selves. I mean, it's all very consistent. It's the same message, different nuances, different sort of flavors to it, same core message, which is really it's validating for me to have that same message come through from so many different you know, clients through their higher selves. So it's a great adventure. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were saying that about the lives and everything, it came back again. It was like, well, remember, it's just experiences. So I was like, okay, put it back in context. It's just the experiences they chose. So.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is that there's so much sort of previous karmic connections with people from previous mm-hmm. lives. You know, like, why is this happening to this person? Well, it's because this is what happened back in this previous life, you know. So it all sort of shows you how it's all connected. And as you go through life, you know, you know, if you're abusing people in one life, in the next life you may say, I want to be an abused person so I can really understand it. It's sort of, it's all connected, and no one forces you to do it, but you do it because that's how you develop, how you really learn. Yeah. It's like the story of the, I can't remember, was your mother had a client that was born or blind at birth, and it found out in a previous life that person was a tyrant who liked poking out people's eyes, you know.
Exactly.
And so I found that over and over. And it also found so many correlations where they would say, well, I met my spouse. It was sort of like an instant connection. And then you get them into the hypnosis. Their higher self says, oh, yeah, well, they were spouses in four or five previous lives. And so right. this is just sort of carrying forward. And that's why you have right. that instant sort of like connection. Yeah, so it's all very fascinating. It's all very connected. It all sort of fits together, like the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle sort of come together when you contact, their higher selves and get all the answers, which is really it's very gratifying for them, gratifying for me to be able to help them get these answers. So it's a wonderful right. experience.
Yeah, that's what's good about it is because like you're saying, what you're doing with Albert. I mean, you get the information and you're able to put it in the books and help people that way. And then with QHHT, you're able to help people one-on-one to get their answers that way in a very personal way. And it's very gratifying in that way. So the two different
ways of doing it. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how exactly people who read my books, I'm not sure. Like I'm not there when they're reading it. So I do get email comments, but yeah, it's not quite the same as being there with a person in a QHHT session. And then, after they come out of the hypnosis, it's like, wow, it's like, I've had, so many people say that was amazing. Thank you for doing that. And so that's sort of very gratifying on a very personal level, which is neat.
Right. Yeah. And it's all, absolutely, it's needed. It's all needed. This information is needed. All these things, it all is working to elevate and ascend. I mean, it's all working to do the work. So thank you.
Well, thank you for offering the course. It's just, it's done wonders for me and I'm sure all the other practitioners and all the clients who've had it. It's just an amazing thing. Yeah, everyone should thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank
you. And
Mom.
Your mother. Yes. And your mom. Yeah.
Yeah. Mom. So.
And I should let you know that before every session, I invite your mom to come in and help me. And I'm sure she has.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. She's always there if you ask her. So, yeah. Has she ever, this is funny. I don't know why this is even coming to me. I don't usually do this. Usually somebody will just say if she comes and everything. Gosh, that's weird. Has she ever come in to help you? Or have you had her come in?
Not that I was aware of, but I sort of felt that I was that she was there. It wasn't a direct link, but I sort of felt a presence there, which I assume was her. I have not run into your mom in any of my travels with Albert. Mm-hmm. At some point, hopefully I will. I'm sure you've had contact with your mother.
She's been, it's in a way that's, I'll realize it later. Like I said, she's always here. And if I need her now it's if I need her. Before it was, she was there, in the beginning. Now it's, if I need her and stuff, and it's not very often and stuff. And then once in a while she'll show up in dreams, but it'll be afterwards that I realize, oh, I know what that was and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit for me to realize what was going on. And then I realize that was her, right there.
Yeah. And I'm sure she can accomplish a whole lot more where she is now than when she was in human form, just because of our limitations. So, because, she can be in many different places at the same time. They don't have time over there. So yeah, I'm sure she's doing a lot more, which is great. And so that's likely why she decided it was time to move on.
Yeah. Well, that's what she said. I mean, I when she was passing, that's what she said, is I can do so much more on the other side than I can here. So it was time, and that was hard, but that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was hard at first, but easier now. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it was like immediately I could see what she was doing. So it was like, yeah, that's it. And it was like, it was an agreement that we had. So on this other level, obviously, because this level did not understand it.
Yeah.
it's still working that out. So, but yeah.
Yeah. She's doing great things. And so we should all be very grateful for her life on earth and what she's doing right now. So amazing lady. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very grateful for her. Or I wouldn't be here. Anyway, okay. Well, we have like 5 minutes left. So let's do a little bit, make sure everybody knows how to reach you and contact you if they would like to. And then we'll do some last little tidbit, you know, parting messages and anything else you want to say. So,
okay.
How can they find you if they want to?
So the best place is my website, which is garnetschulhauser.com, which is hard to remember. But if you Google Dancing on a Stamp or any of my book titles, you can get there. And on my website, there's you can download free excerpts of my book. You can read a synopsis, watch a book video. You can dial into all of my social media sites like Facebook and YouTube and LinkedIn and so on. And there's buy links on my website where you can click into the Ozark Mountain and all the other online stores to buy their books. Mm-hmm. And my newest book is now available from Ozark Mountain, and I don't think it's hit Amazon yet, but it will in the next couple of days. So hopefully people will just dial in and buy my latest book. My email address is on my website. I'm happy to hear questions, comments from your listeners, and I strive to answer every one of them. I have so far, so I look forward to hearing from them more. And also on my website, you can dial into my YouTube channel where I've posted recordings of every one of my previous radio shows that you can listen to them. This is show number 132 for me, Julia.
Fantastic. Yeah, all right.
I've been doing quite a few and quite enjoy them, and I've got some more lined up, and I'll get more going as book four gets rolling, after the launch.
Yes.
And so there you are. I hope people will dial into my website and find out all about me and my books. And I also have another website for my QHHT. If anybody wants to see what I'm doing there, it's garnetschulhauserqhht.com. And you can also get a link from my web book site onto my QHHT site. So if anybody's in my area and wants to have a session, I'd love to hear from them.
And what area are you in?
I'm in Victoria, British Columbia, which is on Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada.
Okay.
And so I could pretty much cover the Vancouver Island, and I can do Vancouver and anywhere. It depends on how far away they live.
Fantastic. Yeah, you make yourself easy to find, so that's really good. Presence and everything.
Yeah, and or if they Google my name, they can get to my website as well. So it's pretty easy to find me, and lots of information on my site, and hope to hear from people.
Fantastic. Okay, absolutely. Yeah, and like they can tell you're easy to talk with.
Thank you.
So okay. So what would you like to leave your audience with?
One of the more interesting trips I had in my fourth book, which may be befuddling to some people, was the fact that, you're aware of this, is that there are parallel universes that exist in parallel with us. So one of my more interesting trips was to a parallel universe, parallel Earth in a parallel universe, and it was at the same time frame. And what was really interesting was, just let me back up a bit. Our universe is always subdivided randomly. And so initially when a universe splits into two, it's like a dividing cell. Initially, both of them are identical, but after a while they go off on different courses because of different interaction with energy and matter and so on. Mm-hmm. So I went to this Earth in a parallel universe, and it was very, what was interesting was Albert took me to New York City, to the lower Manhattan. And I noticed that the World Trade Towers were standing. And I said to him, well, what year is this? And he said, well, it's 2016, same as in your planet. I said, well, why are they still standing? He said, there was a quirk in the history of this planet. And what happened was that Muhammad died in a freak accident at a very early age on that planet, in that universe. Islam was never founded. So there's no Islam anywhere in the world. There were no crusades to rid the Holy Land of Muslims. There was no Syrian civil war. There are no Muslim extremists. Hence, the trade towers were still standing. And I thought, that's really quite amazing. And then he surprised me even further by taking me up island in Manhattan to Harlem. Dropped me down in Harlem, and he said, it was busy, people are walking around the streets. And he said, do you notice anything different? And I said, I looked, and it seemed natural. And then I noticed that it was all white people. There were no black people. And I said, how can this be? This is Harlem. He said, well, due to another quirk in the history of that planet, way back in the 1500s, Britain abolished slavery, outlawed it, and so did the rest of Europe. And so there was never any slave trade to the Americas, never any slave in America. They didn't bring slaves in from Africa. It was totally outlawed. And so the black population of the America and that planet was like 1% just from natural immigration, as opposed to like 13% in our earth. And because of that, there was no civil war. Lincoln didn't have to emancipate slaves because there weren't any. No civil rights movement. Martin Luther King wasn't even born in the country. And that's why it was different. And so those two different things, two little quirks, very sort of, I mean, you could say they're almost accidental, it really changed that planet. So it was sort of an eye-opener. And I thought, and I said to him, do I exist, Garnet Schulze, or do I exist on this other parallel universe? And he said, no. Okay. He said, no, it is a quirk in history, and I better cut it off now. But anyway, it was interesting that I do exist in other parallel universes, but not in that one.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting how little things like that can have that much of an impact.
Yes.
That's something that is a really cool thing to leave with, to make us think.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's how we will leave it then. We are going to think.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Garnet, for being on with us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you. And you too. And everyone, good night and have a wonderful week. And we'll see you next time. Love you all. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.